chapter 9, which trumpets 5 and 6. Chapter 10 is the story about the little book. Andrew gives him a little book. He eats the little book. It gets makes him sick. And he says, you've got to prophesy again. Okay, chapter 11 is about the two witnesses.
Can I ask you a question? Prophesy again, as in...
I said, that's where he seems to... as he's getting up to trumpet number 7, he says, look, you're going to have to start back over and tell the story again. Mm. And he does it from a different perspective with the bowls.
Okay.
11 is the two witnesses, and then the seventh trumpet. Chapter 12 is the story about the dragon and the woman and the child of the woman. The woman seems to be Israel. The dragon is identified as Satan. The child seems to be Christ. Chapter 13, we read about the beast that comes from the sea, as well as the false prophet. The Antichrist and the false prophet, they're called two different beasts here. 14, in the beginning, you see Jesus and 144,000 standing on the mountain at Zion. Angels preaching, just flying around preaching in heaven. And then it ends with the two harvests. Chapter 15, all it seems, it's a very short chapter, it seems to just introduce the bowls, the last judgments. That's all chapter 15 does. And then chapter 16, the whole chapter, is the seven bowls. I should put it up an outline. I'm sorry. I just wanted to kind of go through and just give a little overview, but now I see how much you guys are writing. I wish I would have printed it up for you. 17 he has the vision of Babylon, the prostitute, and then chapter 18 is the people crying about that Babylon has been destroyed, and oh, we loved it so much, it was so wonderful, and it's sad that it's gone. Okay. Chapter 19 is the return of Christ. And the war that follows, Armageddon. Okay, chapter 20, you have the millennium in the first half, the great white throne judgment in the second half.
Hold on. The millennium and what?
The white throne judgment. Chapter 20. Chapter 21, new heaven, new earth, new Jerusalem. New. That's what 21 is about. And then, I guess 22 is a further description of the new Jerusalem, and then the final, you know, the final charge from the Lord. If anybody adds to this book, he's going to be in trouble. And he says, I'm coming quickly, and all that type of thing. His final exhortation. So that's just a quick walkthrough through the book. Yeah?
I'm sorry, you said that the dragon, what was the dragon, the woman, and the son?
The dragon is Satan, and the woman is
Israel.
Israel and the child's Christ.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll be able to touch on those a little bit more. Okay, I don't want to get too much into the messages to the churches. You want to look, we don't have a lot of time, we want to look more at the prophetic stuff. So we'll start at chapter 4. Well, the only thing is, though, in each of those messages at the end, he says, to him who overcomes, I will give. Like he says, I'll get to eat of the paradise, the tree of life, the first one. The second one, he says, to him who overcomes, he will not be hurt by the second death. The third one, to him who overcomes, I'll give some of the hidden manna and a white stone and a new name written on the stone, which no one knows. Next one, to him who overcomes, I will give authority over the nations, and he will rule them with the rod of iron, as the vessels of the potter are broken to pieces. As I receive authority from my Father, as I received authority from my Father, and I will give him the morning star. The next one, to him who overcomes, He shall be clothed in white garments. I will not erase his name from the book of life, and I will confess his name before my Father and before the angels. Next one, to him who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of God. He will not go out. I will write upon him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven, and my new name. The last one, to him who overcomes, I will grant to him to sit down with me on my throne. Imagine that. As I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. So if he gives a message to each church, then at the end, he gives a general promise to the overcoming one. Okay?
How many times did he say that?
Seven. Because there are seven different churches, and each time they follow, you know, a real similar pattern. Seven to each churches. Okay? Chapter 4. After these things I looked, and behold, there was a door open in heaven. And he hears the voice that he heard back in the beginning. It sounds like a trumpet. He says, come up here. I want to show you some stuff. Okay? Basically, John looks up and he sees the door open and somebody says, hey, John, come here. Let me show you something. He had to be taken up into heaven to see things transpire in heaven. Okay, immediately as I was in the spirits. Okay, verse 2. Everybody? I was in the spirits, and look, there were three people sitting on the throne. One was an old man, he had a beard, and there was a young man next to him, and there was a bird flying around between them. Okay, what does it say?
One sitting on the throne.
One sat on the throne. Very good.
Amen.
He was not in the spirits, he was in the spirit.
One throne.
Which one? Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
which verse?
Oh, verse 2.
Yeah. I think she did.
Okay.
That's
the
one.
4 and 1. If you read it from the King James or the New American Standard, one is in italics. However, it is required because the verb for sitting is singular.
It says someone sitting.
Yeah. Oh, well, you're reading the... That, oh yeah, today's English version. Yes. Someone. The point is it's singular though. So there's only one guy on the throne.
She asked him for the chapter 3, verse 21.
Yeah, I sat down with my Father on his throne. That's good. And he also says that anybody who overcomes is going to sit with him on this throne. So every person who is saved, imagine that would be a really big throne. Okay, this is figurative. Okay, Jesus is, like he says, one of the other ones, he says, you will be a pillar in the temple. Okay, you know, a pillar is something that holds up the temple. He's not saying you're literally going to stand there in heaven all day and hold up the roof. That doesn't sound very fun. Okay, that's figurative language.
Yes.
Okay.
He wants to explain
for him
why is the
Father in. Well, but my point is, he also says whoever overcomes can sit on this throne as well. Okay. So if that literally means everybody, that's a big throne.
Right, gotta be like
this. Yeah. We can sit on somebody's lap or something.
Like, yeah, people go in the phone booth, attack in the phone booth.
Okay. One sat on the throne. I don't want to go too much into the vision. You know, he says, okay, some people want to make a big deal. You know, you have the lamb taking the scroll from the one sitting on the throne and all this, and say, look, there's two persons. Obviously, John did not see here Jesus Christ and God the Father. He saw a lamb which had been slain. He looked and saw a literal... I mean, obviously, there's it's a vision intended to teach him something. Okay? He saw a real lamb, which was dead and lying on the ground. I think he said he had like 7 eyes and 7 horns or something. Okay? Which was intended to portray something spiritual. Okay, the lamb is a humanity aspect. God did not die. You know, as a man, Jesus Christ was the lamb slain. Yet as God, he sits upon the throne. So the lamb and the one, it's not, okay, look, here's two different people. Okay? Okay, the point is it's a vision intended to teach him something. Mm-hmm. It's not that he literally saw, here's God the Father, here's God the Son, you know, or anything like that. Okay? The scroll in his hand. Most are of the opinion the scroll is a will or a deed, and it's sealed, possibly, you know, a title deed to the earth or something, that only Jesus Christ has the authority to open. Because he is the King of Kings. Okay, and basically that's, I don't want to get too much into his vision. You go to chapter 6, and there's six seals that are open. Now, possibly the scroll was, you know, of course you see a scroll, it's wrapped up like this. Now, possibly those seven seals are, like they wrapped it a little bit, and they put one seal here, and then another one here, and another one here, and another one here. So each time you'd open one seal, it'd be partially open. Or, they were just, you know, like here's a scroll all wrapped up, and they're all on the front page at one time. And, I mean, apparently they,
open the first
they would do them both ways. So, whatever that matters. Who cares? Chapter 6, verse 1. First seal. The Lamb broke the first of the seven seals, and someone says, come look at this. I looked and behold, a white horse. He who sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given to him. And he went out conquering and to conquer. I am of the opinion with most that this represents the Antichrist. It's a false Christ. There's a good amount of people, though, that say, no, this is Jesus Christ. Because later on, in chapter 19, Jesus is on a white horse. Well, that's about the only... That's the end of the analogy. I mean, the fact that Jesus is on a white horse later on, there's nothing else... that seems really strong to show that this would be Jesus Christ. Number one, this horse is listed with other things that are destructive and bad and that type of thing.
But
yeah.
In this verse, they say also, verse 2, they give it to him a crown.
A crown was given to him.
Yeah,
and he went out conquering to conquer.
Chapter 19, you said, right? Chapter 19.
Yeah.
It doesn't say they give him a crown. They only said they.
Yeah, it said he had many crowns. Depending on what translation you're reading, it's a different word for crowns. A better translation reads he had many diadems.
How would you think that would be the Antichrist? In verse 2.
Yeah, I'm getting to that. Yeah, Jesus had said he was on a white horse. It's called Faithful and True. His eyes are flames of fire. On his head were many diadems. Some translations may read crowns, but it's a different word for a different type of crown. Okay, in chapter 6, it's the word Stephanos, and it's one crown. Jesus comes on a white horse. He has many diadems. Which is a royalty.
Right,
crown. The point I said is Jesus, nobody give it nothing.
Right.
Okay.
And the chapter 6 says
it was given to him.
Yes,
yeah,
somebody gave it to him.
Yeah. Well, for several reasons, Jen. First of all, the beginning of the tribulation seems to be the Antichrist coming on the scene. Like Daniel, 70th week, it's him signing the covenant with Israel. Number two, all six of these seals parallel very well with the Olivet Discourse, Matthew 24. Jesus says, first thing you're going to have is false Christ. Okay. Number two, you're going to hear of wars and rumors of wars, which is the second seal. The second horse is war. The third thing, then he's going to have famines, which is the third seal. Then he says, then they're going to deliver you up and kill you. Fourth seal is death. The fifth seal is the martyr, which is a result of their died. Now there's martyrs in heaven. Then the sixth seal is the sun turns into darkness, moon into blood, and all that. So,
what is the white horse representing?
Antichrist, in my opinion. Okay. See, number one, other places seem to depict the Antichrist as him coming on the scene as the beginning. Okay. Number two, I said it parallels Jesus' description of the tribulation in Matthew 24, the Olivet Discourse. And if everything else parallels, Jesus said the first thing is false Christ. Okay. Then we read he goes off conquering and to conquer. Well, the Antichrist is going to go out and conquer the kingdoms of this world. And since he is a false Christ, he's going to claim to be the real Christ, but he's a false Christ.
Right.
Would we not expect him to be trying to look like
right.
the true Christ? You see what I mean? Why is he riding a white horse? Well, Jesus is riding a white horse.
Right.
He's pretending to be the real deal. People believe him, they accept him, but he's not. That's what Jesus warned us about.
Baxter thinks it's Catholicism. Baxter.
Yeah. No, for different reasons, Beth, I see from chapter 6 on in the future. Like I said, the main thing is that these parallel so well with the Olivet Discourse and Jesus' description of the tribulation there. These seals just line right up with what he described. So, and what Jesus described, he went back to referring to Daniel and the abomination of desolation and all that, which is Daniel's 70th week, which is the tribulation. So, yeah, I see this as future. Some of the people that argue that it is Christ and not Antichrist have also objected because, it's true he's on a white horse, but the book of Revelation, they say, always depicts things as they really are. And white is the symbol of the good guys, not the bad guys. That's one of their arguments. Okay, turn to chapter 13, just real quick, we'll just about there. Just to point out, this is one example that does not always happen. 13 is describing the false prophet. Verse 11, I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a
lamb,
but he spoke like a dragon. Okay, so right there you see the bad guy trying to look like a good guy.
Right.
He has two horns like a lamb. Jesus is a lamb, peaceful, nice. But he spoke like a dragon. Okay, so if that can happen there, I have no problem with here somebody, a wolf in sheep's clothing, so to speak. The Bible says Satan has transformed himself into an angel of light. So we should not be surprised if his ministers will do the same thing it says. Okay. And then also, if it was Jesus, why does he have a bow? Every time you read about Jesus fighting, it says he has a sword that comes out of his mouth and destroys his enemies. Jesus kills by his word.
Amen.
This guy's got a bow. You know, he's out shooting arrows to fight. Also, this is the beginning of the tribulation. He goes out conquering and to conquer. It makes no sense that Christ, at the beginning of the tribulation, is going out conquering. We do know the Antichrist is at the beginning. He goes out and he conquers the nations and he rules the world. But there's nothing that makes sense for Christ to, at the beginning, going out conquering. At the end, he comes back and he takes over and he conquers everyone. Okay? But not at the beginning. So, I'm of the opinion the most that this is Antichrist. False Christ on a white horse. Okay, the second seal, he breaks the second one. And a red horse goes out. And it was granted for him to take peace from the earth. What's the opposite of peace? War. Takes away peace, what do you have left? War. And as I mentioned in the Olivet Discourse, Jesus speaking, talking about this time period, he said that he was going to be Antichrist and there's going to be wars, rumors of wars. Okay, the third seal. This is, I looked and there was a black horse. Had a pair of scales in his hand. And
balances?
Yeah, balances, scales, same thing. It's, you know, what people buy and sell with trade.
Right.
With scales. And he says, a quart of wheat for a denarius, 3 quarts of barley for a denarius. Do not harm the oil and the wine. So it seems, this is a famine. The thing about don't harm the oil and the wine, where a teacher's pointed out, what's that?
I wanted you to tell me that one.
Okay, stuff like, he talks about wheat and barley, but don't hurt the oil and the wine. And I think it was with Joshua, when they went into conquered the land, or some were specific, he was told, burn up the grass, you know, the wheat, the stuff that grows back next year. Okay, wheat, you plant wheat, you harvest wheat. Plant wheat, you harvest wheat. Trees, you burn down a tree, it's gone. Okay? So the point is, God told Joshua, he says, look, when you go to these people out, you know, go ahead, you know, demolish the stuff that's going to grow back next year. But the oil, the wine, things that, vines and trees and things that you're going to need, you're going to inhabit this land, you're going to live there, you don't want to destroy that. Okay? So basically, he said, you know, this seems to be the same thing going on here. We are going to be taking possession of this world shortly. Jesus is going to come back and take possession, and we're going to live here, so we don't want to destroy the things that will be useful. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Is that before everybody goes to heaven? The New Jerusalem, right?
It depends if you're asking. It depends on who you're asking.
Yes.
Okay.
Gonna get fired.
Okay, the fourth horse. He broke the fourth seal. And the next horse comes. And look, a pale horse. He who sat on its name was death. Okay, here you don't have to guess what the horse is. He tells you. He was death. And hell followed with him. Authority was given him over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword, by famine, pestilence, and by wild beasts. So with this one plague, one-fourth of
right.
the earth is killed.
Right.
With this plague, it's one-fourth. And then, okay, if one-fourth is killed, you got what? Three-fourths left, right? And then with one of the trumpets, I think it's five or six, it says one-third of the earth is killed. So, one-fourth is already gone. You've got three-fourths left. One-third of three-fourths is another fourth. Okay? If you're figuring on what's left over. So between these two plagues, one half of all humanity is wiped out. With two plagues. And there's other places where people are killed and stuff, so it'll be...
How many billion are we up to? Six?
What's that?
Up to 6 billion.
Yeah. So with just two of these plagues, half of the planet is wiped out. The fifth seal, he breaks it and he says he saw the martyrs underneath the altar who had been killed for the word of God and the testimony which they had. And he says, how long are you going to wait till you judge and avenge us? And God says, just a little bit longer. Just hold your horses, we'll be there soon. We're coming to the end, we're going to wrap things up, and it's all going to be done. And he gave him a white robe and said, rest a little while. Okay, the sixth seal I mentioned, looked at a little while ago, I'll read it again. He broke the sixth seal, there was a great earthquake, the sun became black. As I mentioned, this goes all the way back to Joel's prophecy about the coming of the Lord. The moon became like blood. And I mentioned Jesus said that this stuff happens after the tribulation's over. So this is once again the end. The stars of the sky fell to the earth. Like a fig tree drops its figs. The sky was split apart like a scroll when it's rolled up. I mean, imagine, the curtain being pulled back. You know, a scroll rolled up is kind of... I think this is where Christ is revealed. You know, it's like the sky just parts away. Yeah. And then they're going to see Jesus there. The sun turns black, the moon... God turns off all the lights, opens up the sky... And there's Christ looking down on everyone. And he comes back. Every mountain and island were moved out of their places. Make sure you're not in Key West on this day. Or you have a nice boat. The kings of the earth and the great men and the commanders hid them. People were hiding in the caves and mountains. Saying, fall on us and hide us from his wrath. Notice they say, from the face of him who sits on the throne. Okay? This implies to me, they see Jesus Christ at this point. If they're running and saying, hide us from his face, you know, it seems evident that they see him.
And who's calling him out? Did you say?
It says, the kings of the earth and the great men. And the slaves and the free, everybody. Okay, hide us, he's coming. Okay, and then it stops, and it goes, it gives you this little interlude about sealing 144,000. It seems to describe, from every tribe of the sons of Israel, it says, and it lists 12 different tribes of Israel that these are. Some have taught that, you know, these are, for evangelism or something. Revelation never says anything like that. It just says that they're sealed. And later on they're saved. What I think is what's going on here is that God is preserving a certain amount from each tribe so that there will be a nation of Israel by the time it's all done. He's preserving a remnant of Israel to preserve the nation. Yeah, chapter 7. And there are some that say, well, you know, these are representative of the church. Their reasons are the list that John gives is kind of different when he names the tribes. And let me see. Yeah, and they lean more towards, you know, the church is spiritual Israel. But I tend to think this is talking about literal Israel. When we read Romans 11, you know, Paul says that God still has a plan for them, and, you know, in the end, Israel will be saved. So what I think, and I'm still tentative on this, but what I think is going on here, God is marking these guys to preserve them, to preserve the Jewish nation. It doesn't say that they go evangelizing through the tribulation, or even that they believe at this point. But I think he's just preserving them to preserve the nation. Okay? Alright, and then notice, there's a great multitude in heaven from every tribe, tongue, nation, and people. John says, well, who are these guys? Verse 9. And he asks the angel, or the angel asks him, he says, hey, John, who are these guys? He says, I don't know, you do, verse 14. And then the angel says, these are the ones who come out of the great tribulation and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. For this reason, they're before the throne of God, and they serve him day and night in his temple. Verse 16, they will hunger no more, neither thirst any more. Neither shall the sun beat on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb in the center of the throne shall be their shepherd, shall guide them to the springs of water of life, and God will wipe away every tear from their eye. That's our hope. It's beautiful. Okay. Okay, then chapter 8, he picks up with the seventh seal. There's silence in heaven. I was taking a class, this is what I was taught, okay? I was taking a class in seminary, and the professor says, see, this is proof positive that there's going to be no women in heaven. Why? Well, because it was silence for half an hour. And there's no way that...
Yeah.
That's what he said. And I said, no, that's not true. That's not right.
Somebody says there's going to be, you know, like, impossible to women.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess Gilbert wouldn't be saved.
Hey, we outnumber you guys.
That's why I said this is just what I was taught. I'm not saying I agree with it, but that's what some bad professor told me. Okay, then you have the seven trumpets. Like I said, that seemed to, you know, depict the end with the number six. And then he starts over. He tells a story again. So just listing some different things. First angel, chapter 7. Hail and fire mixed with blood. They're thrown to the earth. A third of the trees and the grass is burned up. The second angel sounded. Something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea. And this, okay, a third of the creatures were in the sea. No, this is not the one. A third of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. And the third angel sounded, and a star fell from heaven. The name of the star was Wormwood, and it made the waters bitter, and people died because of the water. And the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun, and the moon, and the stars were darkened, so that for a third of the day there was no light. And then verse 13, look, he says, I saw an angel flying, and he says, woe, woe, woe to those who dwell on the earth because of the remaining blast of the trumpets of the three angels that are about to sound. So, once again, you see a 4-3 division to the seven. Remember the first, the seals, the first four are horses, and then the last three are different things. But once again, you see, you know, the first four trumpets, then the last three he calls the three woes. As if they're really bad. So there's that 4-3 both times. The fifth trumpet is blown. These creatures come up from the middle of the earth and they torment people. They have these tails that sting, and they're allowed to do this for, I think it says 5 months or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Go back and read that sometime. It's good stuff. 13, the sixth angel is, he releases four angels from Euphrates. And here's the word, okay. 15, the four angels will be prepared for this hour, this day and month and year, this specific time they've been waiting for, so that they might kill a third of mankind. That's what I mentioned. Before, a fourth was killed, okay. So now you have a third of what's left. A third of three-fourths left is another fourth. And that's where between those two plagues, half of humanity is destroyed. Alright, chapter 10. I read this a little while ago. John, the angel gives him a book. He eats it, makes him sick. And he says, with the seventh trumpet, the mystery of God is finished. Oh, remember, okay, when we was reading Daniel, he said, with the 70 weeks to finish up, to seal up vision and prophecy. Mm-hmm. Okay? When that 70th week is done, it's vision and prophecy are sealed up. Now here we have, with the coming of the end, with the blowing of the seventh trumpet, he says, the mystery of God is finished. Okay? That seems to be analogous there as well. Possibly, maybe not. But also, okay, verse 11, he says you must prophesy again. So he's going to start back and tell the story again from a different perspective once again. And that's basically what chapter 10 is about. The little book, and he talks about the seventh trumpet coming up, and says you got to tell it again, John. In chapter 11, the two witnesses. There was given me a measuring rod like a staff, and someone says, rise and measure the temple and the altar. The temple of God and the altar, and those who worship. Leave the court which is outside of the temple, don't measure it, for it's given to the Gentiles. They will tread underfoot the holy city for 42 months. Okay, 42 months is 3.5 years. And remember, in the middle of the tribulation is when the Antichrist comes into the temple of God, takes over, sets up the image of himself, and says, worship me. So it seems this is that latter half that they are dominating the land of Israel. And that's when Jesus says, flee to the mountains. But here, God gives some hope. He says, I will grant authority to my two witnesses. They will prophesy for 1,260 days. 1,260 days is also 3.5 years. Clothed in sackcloth. They're the two olive trees and the two lampstands. Verse 5, if anyone wants to hurt them, they breathe fire and burn them up. Verse 6, look at the kind of miracles these guys do. They have power, verse 6, to shut up the sky in order that it may not rain during the days of their prophesying. They have power over the waters to turn them into blood and to smite the earth with all kind of plagues whenever they feel like it. Most are of the opinion, and I'm in the agreement with most, that these are Moses and Elijah. For several reasons. Number one, they are just really good guys to symbolize the law and the prophets. Moses, the law was always connected with him. Elijah was one of the great prophets. Number two, they were the two who appeared with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. And they talked to him about things of the future. And Elijah, for sure, would have to be one of them, because remember Malachi prophesied Elijah's coming before the day of the Lord. Jesus mentioned that. You know, talked about John the Baptist being like a forerunner of Elijah that was coming. So Elijah still has to come back. And we look at the miracles. Remember, Elijah shut up heaven so it wouldn't rain.
Right.
That's, these guys do that. Moses turned the water into blood. These guys do that. He says they can, you know, smite the earth with all kind of plagues. Moses did that type of thing. So it seems the evidence falls most strongly on those two guys.
What about the other one who's below two
kings? Enoch. Yeah, it's another, probably the next most common opinion is that it's Enoch and Elijah. The reason being is because Enoch never died. And they say, well, everybody has to die. Well, my response to that is, what about those who live to the rapture? They don't die. You know, or those who live on the earth through when Jesus comes back. You know, generally every person dies, but it's by no means is
but
it.
But Enoch didn't do those miracles.
We don't read about him doing anything like that. So the
right.
only reason they pick Enoch is because he was taken to heaven and Elijah was taken to heaven. But the evidence seems to fall much stronger on Moses and Elijah. When we
especially
put them,
when
everything
Moses
together.
At the Mount of Transfiguration.
Right.
Those two were together at the Mount of Transfiguration.
Right.
The miracles they did parallel to those guys.
So the Lord also took,
who would you
say?
Elijah.
Elijah.
Some are also of the opinion, it says, Moses says the Lord buried him. Okay, did God come down physically and bury the guy? Or they say that, you know, that was a figure of speech that God took him. We read about in Jude, it says the devil and Michael were fighting over the body of Moses. So even Moses has a mysterious death. But some say, well, maybe Moses was taken up as well. I don't know. But the evidence does seem to favor that this is Moses and Elijah. And their ministry, it says, is 1,260 days. I also see that as being the latter half, which we call the Great Tribulation. When they finish their testimony, verse 7, the beast that comes up out of the abyss will make war with them and overcome them and kill them. Beast kills both these guys. Their dead bodies will be able to sit in the street. Listen to this, which is mystically called Sodom and Egypt. Of the street of the great city, which is mystically called Sodom and Egypt. what city is he talking about? The ending is very definite. Where also their Lord was crucified. Okay? So this is no doubt it's in Jerusalem. That's where the Lord was crucified. So that's the city where they're at. And as I mentioned, that's the city that the Antichrist wants to take over anyway. That's where he's going to sit in God's temple and rule from. So it makes sense that that's where they're prophesying against him, and he kills them after 3 months. And those people from the tribes and tongues are going to look at their dead bodies. They won't. They're not going to bury them. Verse 10. They're going to rejoice and send gifts to one another. Not only do you have a false Christ, you have a false Christmas. That's free. Because of the two prophets which tormented those who dwell on the earth. After 3.5 days, the breath of life from God comes into them. They stand on their feet. Great fear comes upon everyone who sees them. Verse 12, they heard a voice saying, "Come up here." And they went up to heaven in a cloud, and their enemies beheld them. In that hour there was a great earthquake. There it is again. A tenth of the city fell. 1,000 people were killed in the earthquake. Everybody else was scared and gave glory to God. Verse 15, then we have the seventh trumpet is sounded. And again. Once again. So, they were caught up into heaven. Raptured, if you will. Some see this as a different rapture than that of the church. Some of us do not. We see it being the same thing as well. Okay, and I read the end of that where it talks about, it's the language of the remaining verses, 15 to 19, is very strong that this is the second coming here. Jesus receives the kingdom, he begins to reign, the day of his wrath has come, and all this type of thing. So, okay, 12. He says, "So a great sign appeared in heaven. A woman clothed with the sun. The moon was under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars." Does anybody know what this symbolism? 12 stars and the sun and the moon. What is this reminiscent of?
Oh, Joseph's dream.
Joseph's dream. Joseph's dream. Remember, he has a dream. He says the sun and the moon and the 11 stars. He was star number 12. And the 11, his brothers and sisters, bowing down to him. So this is the nation of Israel, which is 12 tribes. Okay? And she was with child. And she cried out, being in labor and pain, to give birth. Verse 3, and you see the red dragon. He had 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns on his head. His tail swept away a third of the stars to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that he might devour the child. And she gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. Okay, what great child came from the nation of Israel?
Jesus
Christ. Who is to rule the nations with the rod of iron? Jesus Christ. Who did Satan try to destroy while he was on the earth? Jesus.
That's going to be the question. Yeah.
Okay, and the child was caught up to God into his throne. Okay, Satan tried to destroy Jesus. He actually did kill him, but Jesus was victorious. And in the end, he was caught up into heaven in the resurrection. And the woman fled to the wilderness, where she had a place prepared for God, so that she may be nourished for 1,260 days. That is that 3.5-year period again. Remember Jesus said, when you see the abomination of desolation, the middle of the period, run away, to the mountains. Whoever's living in that area. That seems to be what this is talking about here. The woman, Israel, runs into the wilderness for 1,260 days or 3.5 years where God protects her. Also, that thing about him pulling in a third of the stars, that is where this and only this, where they get the teaching, you know, the devil took a third of the angels with him when he revolted. And I seem to agree with it. It's only found right here. Okay? And once again, if you would have to say, well, at least that part is goes back to the past. Okay? If you understand it, you're referring to his, you know, when he left heaven and took a third of the angels with him. If you see that as future, then you have to understand it differently. Verse 7, there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels were fighting against the dragon. Verse 8, the dragon and his guys were not strong enough, and they couldn't be there anymore. The dragon was thrown down, that serpent of old, who was called the devil and Satan. You don't have to guess on the identity of the dragon. The devil, Satan, dragon, same guy. Who deceives the whole earth. He was thrown down to the earth. His angels were thrown down with him. Because I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now salvation and power and the kingdom of our God and his Christ have come. The accuser has been thrown down. Who accuses him before our God day and night. Once again, Satan identified as the accuser of the brethren. Remember, he's accusing Job. There's another place in the Old Testament where it says he's accusing somebody else, but that's what the devil does. Points out our fault before God. Verse 11, they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony, and they did not love their life even to death. How they overcame them? Because of the blood of the Lamb. Alright, 13, when the dragon was thrown down to the earth, he persecuted the woman who was about to give birth to the male child. Back up. Verse 12. Rejoice, rejoice, O heaven, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the earth and sea, because the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, knowing that he has only a...